So the topic today is contentment, but I'd like to start by talking about discontent. So this guy, Siddhartha Gautama, that we know of as the Buddha, about 2,500 years ago, I consider him a great philosopher and psychologist. He became a student of the mind, and he questioned why there is suffering in the world. Now, he saw a lot of suffering. You know, back 2,500 years ago, we didn't have these modern medical miracles that we see. And so people, when they got sick, they generally died from their sicknesses. Okay, the word he used for suffering is dukkha. And he contrasted that with a word, sukha, which means liberation. And he said, eventually, he came to the realization that there's a way to overcome this struggle, this suffering, and achieve liberation. For us, I mean, there is a lot of great suffering in the world, so I don't like to use that word, that translation of the word dukkha. For me, the word dukkha talks about stuckness, how we get stuck in our lives, and how we struggle as a result of that stuckness. Okay? So we can talk about being stuck and getting unstuck. The Siddhartha's realization was that all humans get stuck. You could call this stuckness essential discontent. Okay? I spent 40 years of my life in existential discontent. I didn't like the way things were. I was constantly trying to change the way I felt, the way things were on the outside, to control people around me because I felt uneasy with their behaviors. My wife, my children, my business associates. And it didn't work. It just created greater stuckness and greater struggles and greater discontent. So eventually, the Buddha's message was that this stuckness is a universal human experience. Everyone gets stuck. And the question is, what's the source of this? Okay? He identified a way out. He gave the people of his time what he called the Eightfold Path, a way to get yourself unstuck. For me personally, I found a couple of philosophers that lived about 80 years ago discovered how to get unstuck. These two guys, one was a stockbroker from New York City, and the other was a doctor from Akron, Ohio. They were both alcoholics. Impossible to get out of their stuckness in this alcoholism. No matter what they tried, they couldn't get out. And Bill Wilson, the stockbroker from New York, found a way. He had a spiritual experience that changed his whole belief system about who he was and about this stuckness he was experiencing. He found that if he worked with other alcoholics, that if he reached out in service to others, he didn't have to drink. And one day at a time, he worked this new path that he found, the 12 steps. He took it on the road with him as he was trying to do his job, out to Akron, Ohio, met this guy, this hopeless alcoholic. And Dr. Bob, as we call him, Robert Smith, he was a doctor who was no longer practicing because of his alcoholism. He had tried religion. He had tried doctors. He had tried psychologists. He had tried everything, and he was a hopeless alcoholic. And Bill was in Akron, and he started calling churches and saying, do you have any alcoholics in your congregation? And of course, a lot of the ministers were offended. No, not in our congregation. Of course not. Eventually he found Dr. Bob, and he explained what had helped him. And Bob said, you know, you're wasting your time. I've tried everything. He says, nothing you say is going to help me. And Bill said to him, I'm not here for you. I'm here for me. And Bob said, whoa, he perked up. He said, what do you mean? And he said, what I found is if I reach out to you, even if you don't get sober, I stay sober. So he found this path. He, in discovering the source of his stuckness, he realized that he carried certain incorrect beliefs. The Japanese Zen master, Shunryu Suzuki, said that we have conditioned mind, that our mind, our ego mind, becomes conditioned over time. And the source of that conditioning is the people who love us the most, our parents, our family, our teachers. All these people that love us inadvertently teach us lessons about life that aren't quite correct. And that's where we get stuck, in these false beliefs. In order to transcend the discontent of our life, the essential discontent, we must delve into and examine the source of these false beliefs. We often find that holding them dearly creates ongoing suffering for those, for us and for those we love. So there are many paths to freedom. What I've discovered in my practice, starting with the 12 steps, was this was a way to dig down, drill down into the beliefs that underlay my behaviors. Okay? I get angry with my wife. I get angry with my children over trivial things. And I didn't understand why. It was as if I was possessed by some angry beast that made me behave this way. And I had to understand what was underneath that. I drilled down underneath my anger. I found fear. I found a belief about things that was incorrect. I was afraid of things that I didn't need to fear. And yet my conditioned mind, the false beliefs that I had taken on as a child and carried through my life, kept me in that pattern of behavior, stuck in that same belief system and same behavior. It's helpful, although not necessary, to look back, to dig down all the way to the beginning and find out where those beliefs arise. I've made up stories about where some of those beliefs came from. Okay, one of them was, I'm not good enough. There's something wrong with me. I'm defective as a human being. I didn't understand this. It wasn't at a conscious verbal level. This was at a deep down level. And I behaved from that belief. I tried to be perfect. Okay? Because if I were perfect, you would not figure out that there was something wrong with me, that I was a defective person. Okay? One of the wonderful, delightful phrases that comes to mind when I think of that is, I don't know if it was my mother, my father, or both of them used to say this, Douglas, when God was giving out brains, you thought he said trains and you ran the other way. What a delightful message for a child, you know? There's something wrong with me. I didn't get the brains I was supposed to. My mother, to this day, says, Douglas, you're very smart, but you have no common sense. And I'm like, oh, thank you, Mom. What a gift. You know? So these are some of the sources, okay? She really wanted what's best for me. She loved me dearly, loves me dearly to this day. But her stuckness, okay, the way her parents raised her, the experiences of her life made her, caused her to behave in this way. Out of what? Out of fear that I would do something that would hurt myself. So in her loving way of trying to protect and raise me as a child, she conditioned me to think and believe certain things that just weren't true. I like to say today, I used to believe that I was defective, but now I know I'm special. And it's true. I have, my brain works in a very strange way sometimes. I see things very differently from other people. And I've been able to parlay that, in spite of the belief that there's something wrong with me, to be successful in business. Okay? There are lots of people who are on the Asperger's spectrum who function very well as actuaries and computer programmers and at Microsoft. If the skills are channeled in the right way, they can be useful. Okay? The problem was, I believed that there was something wrong with me because I was terrified of talking to other people, of engaging with other people. And so as long as I believed there was something wrong with me, I put up a facade. I wore three-piece suits and red ties for my power lunches and did all this stuff pretending to be someone I wasn't because I was stuck in this false belief. And it's only in recent years that I've been able to kind of let down those barriers and just say, this is who I am, and it's okay. So the way to get unstuck is it's been offered by almost every religious tradition. Number one, you need to look at the past, to look at behaviors, to find the places where we have hurt other people and to make amends. To dig down and understand the patterns of behavior that have created problems between us and others. And the first amend, I looked up the word amend in the dictionary one time. I thought it was an apology. Okay, it says, to make a change for the better. That's an amend. And so the first amend I made was to change how I behave towards other people. I stopped lashing out in anger. And instead, when I start to feel anger arising, I look inside. What's going on? What am I afraid of? Okay? And when I understand those fears and recognize that they're not real, they're illusions or delusions, I can transcend them. We take full responsibility for our past actions, make amends and atone for the actions. The word atone is interesting. If you split it, it becomes at one. To be at one with the divine intelligence of the universe, to be in integrity with yourself, and the intelligence, the creative intelligence out of which all of this manifest realm arises. That is contentment. Some of you may have seen the movie Unforgiven with Clint Eastwood. It's one of my favorites. There was a man, he was an alcoholic, and he wasn't drinking anymore. He was on the prairie, two children, his wife had died, he was a pig farmer. And he was trying to make a go of it, but he wasn't getting there. He's a former gunslinger, and there was an opportunity to make some money, pick up that gun and go out and make some money, and get him out of this stuckness of being a failing pig farmer on the prairie trying to raise two children. And he said, no, I'm not like that anymore. But being out of desperation, he picked up his gun and went and did what he had to do. He righted some wrongs, brought justice in his own way, had to get drunk to do it. But in the end, he had survived the ordeal of his hero's journey. And he came out the other end with the money, grabbed his children and headed west for a new life because he didn't want to be that person anymore. Two components of cleaning up the past: acceptance of who I am and the things I've done, and forgiveness. I work with military veterans and also in the Wisconsin correctional institutions with inmates. And many times, some of the things these people have done, they deem to be unforgivable. Unforgivable. They have done things in the military under orders, or perhaps not under orders, in a rage, and things that have violated their personal moral code and the beliefs they have about right and wrong. This is what we call moral injury. And in prison, some of these men are in prison. They regret what they've done, and yet they say, the things I have done are unforgivable. Well, that's a heck of a place to be, or I should say a hell of a place to be, because that is hell, to believe that the things I've done are unforgivable. Every religious tradition has a process of atonement and forgiveness. I work with some of these men to get them to shift their perspective. In one case, I asked the man, "So what's your religious belief?" And he said, "Well, I'm a Muslim." And I said, "Does Allah forgive you?" "Oh, yes, of course. Allah is all forgiving, all wonderful. And yet you can't forgive yourself. Are you smarter than Allah?" And boom, the light bulb went on. He realized there was something wrong with his belief that what he did was unforgivable. Of course, he has to commit. "I will never do that again." Okay? And then atone. This is the way out of stuckness. To recognize where we were stuck. To clean up the past. Reset our belief system going forward. In the 12-step program, we say that we align our personal will with God's will. I like to simplify it. We do the next right thing. In each moment, we choose what is right. When fear comes up, okay, again, when anger comes up, I drill down. What am I afraid of? What's the story I'm making up about this situation? And I see through the delusion, and I choose the correct thing to do. I'm not saying that fear doesn't arise. I'm not saying that anger doesn't try to rise up inside of me. How do we not react to the anger when it comes up in the old patterns? I like to call it, we cultivate non-reactivity. This is what silent meditation is about. To sit in silence and stillness and not move. It's a simple practice. And yet, we are cultivating a skill of non-reactivity so that when somebody gets in our face or cuts us off on the highway or something doesn't go the way we want it to or the way we planned it or the way we expected it, instead of lashing out in anger, we notice, simply notice the arising of those feelings. And then choose a response. Okay? We're changing from reaction, the conditioned mind, the conditioned behaviors, to response. And when we do that, and we stop the old behaviors that are hurting ourselves and hurting the ones we love, for me, okay, the anger, the sarcasm, the passive-aggressive behaviors, when I stop that and instead open up my heart, and reach out and say, "Okay, this is what I'm feeling in this moment. I'm afraid. I'm feeling a little anger," and I talk about it. I reach out and I try to create connection, which is what I really want. At the bottom, what we really want is love and connection. So underneath all of our fears and concerns is love, deep caring. This is the nature, the core of our being. Deep, compassionate, unconditional love. And we can all find that. We can all access it. But it takes work. Okay? Again, meditation is the beginning. Whatever form of silent meditation you use, what you're doing by committing to, okay, for the next 10 minutes, I will not move. I will simply sit and breathe. You're cultivating this ability of the higher order neocortex in your brain to take charge and not allow the amygdala, that reactive portion, the part that is triggered in a flash by this or that threat or apparent threat. Okay? You're allowing the brain to create new pathways rather than the old conditioned reaction. You're cultivating a different neural pathway and reinforcing that each time you don't react. Each time you sit through the discomfort or the itch or whatever shuffling of the feet or whatever movement you'd want to make and you say, "No, I will sit in stillness." So we cultivate non-reactivity and we will fail again and again. Over time, we'll fail less often. We will see that the cultivation of non-reactivity is working in our lives, in our relationships. We become better listeners. Again, in the 12-step program, we say we will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. I found that peace. And again, whether it's a 12-step path or the Eightfold Path or any other path, we all need to find that spiritual path that leads us to contentment. We will experience liberation, freedom, and contentment. Thank you.